few people this morning, because I was going to begin off by saying that this week's parsha, there's very little that one can discuss. And that's the truth, because in this week's parsha, no significant events that take place. And last week there was a discussion of the building of the tabernacle, which we explained last week, had to do with creating our own security shield, meaning that even though it even though we don't have a tabernacle today, nor after the Holy Temple, was there ever a need for this tabernacle, the Mishkan? No longer needed. It was just a device that the Jews used in the wilderness, never to be used again. Once they had entered the Holy Land, once they had built the Beit HaMikdash, the Holy Temple, there was no longer any need. But we understood from the Zohar and the Ari the significance, because this would permit us to understand that whenever we're in exile, and in exile meaning when we do not access into the Beit HaMikdash, that the tabernacle would be an instrument that could be represented by the Beit HaKnesset. Although all of the instruments mentioned in last week's parsha are not in the Beit HaKnesset, so we think. But the truth of the matter is, all of them are represented there. More specifically, the Aron, the Ark, and the table, the Bima, which Menorah, of course, that is something that we have no idea of how that would appear. It was even difficult for Moshe himself, and so God showed him a physical vision of how that menorah. But we understood that the menorah and things that we could not duplicate in the Beit HaKnesset were there. That when they would be read, from the Torah, then the power, the energy that this menorah was ostensibly in the Mishkan channeling to the Jews, which was part of this protection and security shield that the Jews needed in their exile, because exile is not necessarily a term meaning living outside of Israel, as we have learned from the Zohar, that exile means where the steady stream of energy that each person requires in his daily living. Now, well, what does it mean, energy? Last week and this week is where it's going to make the definition clear. Energy. We speak of energy. Well, everyone understands that things can't move without energy. Automobiles can't move without energy. Wash machines. We can't have light without electrical energy. Everyone understands the basic concept of energy. Energy meaning a device that can move, motivate things, supposedly for our benefit. And of course, by the same token, energy also can stimulate and also express itself in the form of destruction. Military equipment contains an enormous amount of energy. So it is not a question of energy being used only for useful purposes. But what is the energy that we discuss? Is it just merely the kind of energy that keeps the immune system operating? Is it the kind of energy that we don't feel drained at the end of a day? Is it the kind of energy that permits us to become motivated, stimulated? All of these things are correct. But more important, and that's what this week's Parsha is about, more important is the idea that we understand, although this is not an easy concept to come by, although it becomes so simple, but the idea that when we have, and we have, unfortunately, every day decisions to make, whether to go to the supermarket, not to go to the supermarket, whether to turn on the TV, not to turn on the TV. I mean, sometimes questions that even, well, should I do it now? Should I go to sleep? That's at its lowest level. Even then, you know, we, within our minds, we still raise questions of that nature. And we answer them. Then when we get into some more serious questions is when we have to spend a little more time at decision making. It's not that simple. And when we do that, then we have to question, am I making the right decision or am I not making the right decision? And we'll see from this week's Parsha, as we have learned in the classes, that what are we talking about, making the right decision or the wrong decision? If tomorrow, yesterday, and today are all part of one, and you have learned in the classes that the steps that we take down the road, the steps that we take in life, each and every single day, the steps that we will be taking this afternoon. I mean, when I say steps, I mean physical movements, where we're going. And scientists, as well as the Torah, define it as walking or in the footsteps, walking in the footsteps that have already been prepared long before we make the move. If I'm on the East Coast and I'm thinking of walking the next day on the beach here in Santa Monica, that when I arrive and I walk on that sandy beach, I'm walking in the footsteps that already have been prepared before by the fact that I think I want to go to California, that I have given it some thought unconsciously or consciously, even unconsciously, mm-hmm. meaning I haven't got the slightest idea that tomorrow may be raining. So am I going to go on the beach? So unconsciously, even if I'm thinking, and I don't know about the thoughts that I'm having, but how can I prepare myself if I don't know the weather tomorrow? And certainly if it's going to rain, I'm not going to go to the Santa Monica Beach and walk in my footsteps. But we have to also assume that alongside the fact that I will be walking in my footsteps, already it is known what the weather will be today, tomorrow, and the next day. Unfortunately, the weatherman doesn't know what's going to be tomorrow. He can even predict it and be wrong. But when it comes to the idea of what tomorrow will be and everything that is involved in that decision of tomorrow, like walking on the beach, subject to the weather, subject to an emergency that might arise that will prevent me from going on the beach, although I may have had the thought of walking on the beach, and along comes some situation that doesn't permit me that day to take that walk on the beach. And so the footsteps will not even be there because it is all foreknown. All foreknown. This is how when we discuss from a Kabbalistic point of view, not only a sign to say when you walk the beach or whatever steps you take along the road in life, you're already walking down a path that has been trodden upon before you even get there. If we don't understand this, if we don't understand it, what I mean, if we don't understand it, if we can't even accept the idea, not that we can't understand it, because it's not that deep. If you say tomorrow, today, and yesterday are all one and the same, then what is there to understand? If tomorrow has already been understood as to mean yesterday. So tomorrow is not a concept. Tomorrow is only a concept of fragmentation in my mind that I divide yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Where is that division taking place? The Torah says, Zohar says, that division takes place in the satanic aspect of our minds. Satan, who is famous and noted for his influence of fragmentation in the universe, although it's an illusion, but he instills within us the idea that there is a tomorrow. Because we use a watch, there is an idea of 1 minute from now, all indicating that there is fragmentation, there is separation. But both from a scientific point of view and from the Zohar point of view, that's satanic consciousness. So our problem in understanding that tomorrow is like it is here as yesterday is similar to the seed. But there we also make separations. When we discuss the seed as already having included the root up until the final, if it's an apple seed, up until the final development of the apple itself, we understand that within the seed, the apple's there. That isn't difficult to come by. Only problem that we may have is when does the apple make its appearance? Well, let's say it takes 1 day from the seed, but it certainly doesn't take place at the same time. This again, this idea of making that separation in time, while from the seed to the apple, we know that the apple is already there within the seed. There's no problem to understand that. What is our problem? Our problem is time. Time. How can we assume that tomorrow is already here now? And of course, the other questions that will arise, how can we assume that tomorrow's here or is here in the here and now? When that should permit me to be able to purchase stock today in the stock market, knowing what the price is going to be tomorrow. What's the problem? Where does the problem lie? And so, assumingly, you have also learned in the classes, without going into detail, and that is that once we have raised ourselves to the level of understanding that the conscious mind is Satan, conscious mind is Satan, and any aspect that I did not know of, any aspect, any form of existence, future existence, that I cannot even conceive now, like Einstein didn't conceive of relativity until a certain date. Galileo, Newton, they didn't conceive of it at all. For them, it was not in the conscious mind. Because it was in the conscious mind, they would have written about it. They would have discussed it. Consequently, it wasn't even in the conscious mind. If it's not in the conscious mind, then Does it mean it's not there? Of course it's there. If in my consciousness mind I didn't learn yet, I've never witnessed a seed coming to fruition as an apple. I don't know that. Does that mean it doesn't exist? My dear, of course it's there. Nothing that science has ever revealed for us is a phenomena that did not exist. It was only in our conscious mind that it remained in the unconscious. We were unaware of its existence. But that doesn't preclude it's not there. The moment it becomes aware, meaning the moment that the unconscious becomes conscious. In other words, it's no longer in the realm of the unknown. We now know. The minute we now know, that when it's brought into consciousness, we then create the limitations on whatever becomes into the consciousness. That's how consciousness is an arch enemy. What it even does is take something supernatural phenomena, meaning that tomorrow is here now, which in the unconscious knows of no separations. The minute we become aware of that idea, we place all of the satanic limitations on that piece of information. Therefore, knowing about the stock market, if knowing would become an idea, in other words, knowing about tomorrow, since tomorrow is here now, why can I not know about tomorrow? Because the minute you know about tomorrow, you have taken it out of the realm of reality and placed it into the realm of illusion. So if somehow a birdie came and told me about a particular stock, and I say, oh, this must be part of that reality phenomena that tomorrow I know now, and I buy the stock, and the stock goes down. So how could that be? Because the minute there is a reality, what you should do is buy a stock and not know why you bought it. When you buy a stock and not know why you bought it, it comes through an unnatural channel. So to speak, you wake up in the morning and you hear a word that you never heard before. Couldn't say it. The word IBM, everyone, I guess, heard of IBM. But you hear of a word that you never heard before. Not all of us are familiar with every stock that's on the market. You wake up and you don't know what that is. And you mention it and someone who is familiar with all stocks in the market says, oh, that's a stock on the... The chances are that stock will go up. Because it has remained, even after it entered the consciousness realm, for all intents and purposes, someone says, DLH, I don't know if there's a stock like that. DLH, well, what's DLH? It doesn't even mean a word. And so the person remains in the unconscious level of, it's an unconscious level because he doesn't know what it means. That's unconsciousness. What is the difference between conscious and unconscious? Conscious means you're ready to define it. What is the consciousness mind? You define it. You know what it is. When you don't know about something, you hear something. Someone tries to explain something to you and you still don't understand it. Then it can encompass all of the aspects of reality, tomorrow, today, and yesterday. The minute, and this is the most difficult part that those who study Kabbalah, the most difficult part for one who studies Kabbalah to come to grips with, to accept. Although, yeah, we have no choice in accepting. If it's reality, science says it's reality, the Zohar says it's reality. Who's asking you whether you accept phenomena or not? It's already an accepted principle. But we have a unique problem. What's our problem? The ego. Ego says, how can I accept something? I'm from Missouri. How can I accept something that I don't understand? What do you think? What do you think? I'm stupid? Who's saying that? You realize who's saying that? Your ego is saying it. That's Satan. That he doesn't want us even, he doesn't permit us even the luxury of saying, I don't understand. Won't permit it. I must understand. Why must you understand? Why can't you just operate with it? Learn what the Zohar says. If you don't understand, you've heard something, it'll unfold itself. How can it unfold without my participation? Well, you know, you'll be a participant, but you'll be a participant as if you're sleeping. And the events are unfolding, and you're almost like a robot, following the mechanics. Oh, wait a second. That's what you want to, you want to place me in that position? So, beside the idea that the unconscious is the only true reality, and the reason why we call it true reality. Why do we call it true reality? Why true reality? Because truth doesn't belong in the realm of fragmentation. Truth is Aleph Emet, Aleph Mem Tav. It's from beginning to end. That's truth. That's truth. Anytime you try to figure it out and then, I've got it now. No, at that moment, Satan has taken over your consciousness. Satan has taken over your consciousness and now has taken out of the realm of Aleph until Tav, taking in all of the considerations, taking into consideration all of the events that are involved with the event. All of the surroundings, going through California, walking on the beach, knowing already the weather, all of these different calculations, knowing that there won't be a call, that you've got to leave Los Angeles almost upon arrival at the airport and proceed on to San Francisco. And so today you're not going to be on the beach. All of these events, that as long as they remain in the unknowable, then it's truth. And you should never have gone. It's not for your benefit. In other words, truth is part of what we consider to be the realm of Etz HaChayim, where there is no evil. As long as we remain in the unconscious, as long as we remain in the unconscious, as long as events unfold before us, and we don't know why they're unfolding. We don't know. We don't know. Now, does that mean that we should stop thinking? Because the minute we think, we brought whatever we're thinking about that we have not understood before I begin to think. If I begin to think, I will bring it into the realm of the conscious. If I bring it into the realm of the conscious, I brought it into the realm, into the world of fragmentation. Is Satan a part of of the thinking process? In other words, don't think. Because if you do, and you receive some clarity, and you begin to understand, well, that's him. Him directing me to bring things of an unknowable, region into the knowable. And we're saying now that the minute something becomes knowable, it falls into that fragmentation, into the fragmentation of the knowable, into the fragmentation of separation, into the realm of Etz HaDaat, the tree of knowledge, good and evil. So what are we supposed to do now? Stop thinking? Stop thinking? Because the moment, I repeat again, the moment that we bring it into the realm, the moment I bring it into the realm of knowing, the moment I bring it into the realm of knowing, I have begun to limit whatever the results of that thought or thinking process will be in the realm of Eitz HaDaat. So what are we supposed to do? The answer lies in that, excuse me, if this is the process, it doesn't change, because now, again, why must my thinking process be involved in the process? Well, what does that mean, sit here and don't do nothing? And then what's going to happen? A thought comes to you. We have no, incidentally, no control over thoughts. You ever try to stop thinking? Try it sometimes. Not for a second. Try to quiet your mind. No matter what methods you're using. Including Kabbalah. There will be a distinction between the Kabbalistic process of thinking and normal process of thinking. As many people who have been doing the Amidah for many years, who have been praying from the prayer book for many years, if it's orally, it's a bigger problem. But even for those who are literally reading the words because they do not, or scanning the words, they can go, and they know, they have experienced that. They can go from the beginning of the prayer to the end of the prayer, not even realize that they were participating in the process of the prayer. All the time they could be in their place of business or at some beach or in Las Vegas at the same time and still recite every line of that prayer, whether it's orally, whether it's written. You can go through it and not be within the process. That happens to all who pray, without exception. Very difficult to try to prevent other thoughts from even entering into an ongoing process called praying. Now I'm moving my finger. All I'm doing is not even thinking, but just going with my finger, moving it across the line. And in that process, I very rarely can I prevent the thought process from taking place. We have no control. We have no control over the thought process. That's Satan. Can you imagine the force that even when I say I don't want to think, I want to quiet the mind, only to indicate to us, for those of us who have that kind of substantial ego that says, I have no control over my mind, over my affairs. All you do is stop for 1 minute, 60 seconds, and quiet the mind and see how successful you will be in that undertaking. And I assure you that if you're awake, of course, even if you're sleeping, it happens. But if you're awake, not even one moment can pass with a total quieting of the mind and without any thinking process taking place. It's impossible. It's impossible, because this is our connection to Satan. We have something called body consciousness. We have a body, the physical material aspect of every human being. That belongs to the realm of Eitz HaDaat Tovara. That belongs to the illusionary realm. That's why the body disappears. Even Moses, who didn't die, he disappears from our sight. He's not He's not available on a physical level for questions and answers. This is the body. Ultimately, after 120 years, or it'll be 190, whatever the process will be, that influence by body consciousness upon our thinking, will forever remain, because it is the function of Satan consciousness. That's his purpose in his existence, is to create within us confusion. Confusion only arises out of the fact that tomorrow, today, and yesterday remain separate, remain separate entities, are not as one unified whole. And therefore, there is confusion. And that word confusion takes in every aspect. Every aspect. That we're not comfortable with is confusion. I don't know what to do. Do I take this path? Do I take that path? That's confusion. Indecision is confusion. Or even making the decision. Now you've made the decision. And you feel good about that decision. But if we always remember, well, now that I've made that decision, and it become part of the knowing process, we have established today that the minute it becomes part of the knowing process, it's part of the realm of Etz HaDaat, of Satan, subject to good and evil. So while for a while, maybe down the road, the next year, the next 20 years, the next 40 years, decisions have always been right. But ultimately, we find that in most cases, almost without exception, it winds up in chaos. So it's not and it cannot be within the realm of Etz HaChayim where there is no knowing. But we'll still get back to our original question, but to understand that anything that becomes part of the knowing process, thinking process, all the same, where it enters into my consciousness and I make a decision this way or that way, must of necessity lead down the road to chaos. Why? Because you brought it into the realm of Etz HaDaat. You brought it into the realm, and we almost have no free will. Almost, I say almost, because if there was no free will, then Satan can do whatever he wanted with us. And what was the purpose in coming here? But almost no free will in our lives. Because everything turns into a knowing consciousness. Everything turns into a knowing consciousness. So what is there to do? Well, we have the answer in this week's Parsha. Spending as much time, and I'm not sure that everyone, I'm not discussing agreeing or not agreeing, that's not in the realm of our discussion, but even just to understand that beyond any question, this is what takes place in our lives, whether we'd like to accept it. Like I said, ego will be here in a moment to tell me I've got to put myself into a robot, even overextend the thinking of what we have been discussing right now of this thinking process. But there will be unlimited, infinite factors as to why we cannot accept this principle. The main reason, without knowing, will always be Satan's endeavor to place us into a frame of chaos. The only reason. There are different variations of the same idea, but if you want to with Satan, you got to flush him out. Flushing him out means removing all of the trimmings and the wrappings and the coverings that he moves, and the way he moves into our lives is not raw naked Satan. If we could have a clear picture of raw naked Satan, well then we've resolved our problems in life. Whenever he makes his appearance, we learn, listen, you're part of chaos, you leave. And you know, we'll ask him each time in the thinking process, in not only the thinking process, but into the physical manifested process. Satan, stay away. Satan. I mean, I can recognize him, but we can't flush him out. Very difficult. Very difficult to flush him out. And so what is there to do? We're stuck. We're in a catch-22 position. To think, to limit. Not to think, what do? You sit on a chair and wait for what? As if somebody's going to come and take you somewhere. I mean, is that the way it's supposed to happen? Is that, which seems to be the only alternative left? We're not permitting the thought consciousness to make unknowables turn into knowing. Then where are we? Where are we? In this week's parsha, which is called Titzaveh. V'ata titzaveh et b'nei Yisrael. I'd like to begin off with what the Zohar has to say about this, just to begin to understand how we are to conduct ourselves. If we do not understand the problem that we face, and that we have been discussing this past 40 minutes, if that is not clear to us, everything else that's following is really worthless. Really worthless. Well, how could it be worthless? We're going to be sitting here, we're going to hear the words of the Zohar. Can we say worthless? Yes. The reason I say worthless is because what comes first? What comes first? The question or the answer? What comes first? Question. The unknown comes first. It's a process we're all familiar with. The unknowable comes first. The answers, well, that becomes a problem. The questions are clear. The answer sometimes could be fuzzy, could be a little hazy. If we do not understand the problem, and of course the problem again lies in which realm? The realm of the unknowing, and that we wouldn't call it problem. Problem means there's uncertainty here. What? You know, I don't understand it. That's a problem. I don't understand. If we do not understand, I'm saying that's a problem. Well, which is it? If I will understand the problem, then I brought it into the knowable. I'm in a catch-22 all the time. And I'm saying here and now, if we understand the problem, then we can understand the solution. If I understand the problem, so you'll ask, and it's an obvious question. I brought the problem into the knowable, and it's no longer in that state of unknowing. Problem means I don't know. There in understanding this section of it, we shouldn't have too much difficulty, because all of the clarity of understanding the problem, as we will learn shortly in this Zohar, all of the aspects of understanding the problem will only bring further conviction of removing us from the world of knowing. To know clearly why a problem does not belong in the world of Satan. On the contrary, he's the one who creates the problems. He's the one who's leading us into problems. I didn't say that. If you listen carefully, I didn't say that. It's on tape, and if you want to hear it again, I didn't say that. I said that Satan, creates the confusion, not in the origin of the problem. Satan creates the confusion in the solution of the problem, not within the problem. Satan's efforts are not directed towards the problem, because that is like Brit Milah. You understand that Eliyahu comes to the Brit Milah, and what does he say? He says, God, the Jews have forsaken. I don't want to go into the entire lecture but Eliyahu comes and says, God, look at the Jews. They have forsaken the covenant of Brit Milah, of circumcision. Only the Zohar explains it, that when Satan hears that there's somebody, like Eliyahu, who's doing the job for him, like he, imagine how Eliyahu speaks about the Jews. They've forsaken your cardinal precept, the covenant. They no longer want to participate in the idea of the covenant. What does Satan do, says the Zohar? Yes. So I need somebody with friends like Eliyahu HaNavi. I don't need enemies. And so he walks away. There is no need for him to be present anymore. After what's his reason for being there? Create confusion. But if already Eliyahu is creating confusion for him, as the Zohar said, that's why we have to say Zekisei Shel Eliyahu, without going into the details, but how deep and profound that idea is. Not superficially, but because superficially most Jews in the world don't know what Brit Milah is all about. But even those who study Kabbalah, it means that we call upon Eliyahu because he is the ploy by which we can get, during at least the process, get rid of Eliyahu. Now in this manifested process of creating circumcision, Eliyahu has taken a back seat or has left. When we spend as much time as to understand how little control we have over our minds, and that we then in turn stress the importance of how little control we have, of how little knowledge we have, how little understanding we have of anything that has become into the conscious mind, what we're doing at that moment. That's why I say we should spend more time understanding the problem, seeing the problem, or even understanding the problem. But then you said, but I'm taking into the consciousness realm the unknowing. I mean, I have a problem. What does a problem mean? I don't know. And now I'm going through and through and through this problem to understand how fully and thorough I don't understand. Isn't that taking it into the realm of the unconscious? No. No. Yes and no, I should say. Not no, but yes and no. From the yes point of view, yeah, I'm beginning to understand the problem more thoroughly. But what is a problem? I don't know. As I understand, I don't know. I have brought into the realm of I understand that I don't know. I have brought in the I don't know. At the same time, does everybody understand this? I thoroughly understand that I don't know. Is there such a possibility? Thoroughly to understand that I don't know, of course. I haven't any answers. I've gone through it from this aspect, and from that aspect. Now, we say in Kabbalah, instead of going through all the aspects of looking for the solutions, and therefore, as think tanks, the RAND think tank, what does the RAND think tank do? Take problems, now look for the solutions. They're not spending too much time on the problem because the problem is obvious. So they think. Problem is obvious. Doesn't work. The mechanism doesn't produce. The factory called up. Listen, we have a process here. It's supposed to stimulate. It's supposed to hasten the process from the beginning till the end. It's supposed to be in the realm of 16 seconds. We can't have it more than 16 seconds, or not, it won't work out. So how can we solve this problem? We're always looking for solutions. Solutions are the answers. And today we're going to learn the solution is constantly in keeping and understanding and keeping our minds towards the not understanding. It becoming so clear that we do not understand. As long as we can keep, and this is the process, my friends. No other answer in your life. No other answer. You could try to find some more, some new ones. But the Kabbalistic understanding, which fits into science, says that as long as you keep understanding that I do not understand, then the solutions come. Well, now we'll begin to raise the question, well, once the solutions are there, and they become part of the knowable, then they've gone out of the realm of the unknowable. And we said before clearly, again, this is what we must understand beyond any shadow of a doubt, that the minute I have a solution and it becomes part of the knowable, then what have we said about that solution? Finished. It's not part of emet. It will not follow through from beginning to end. Stay away from solutions. Stay away from solutions. Obviously, if it becomes part of the knowable, then it's part of the realm of Eitz HaDaat, part of Satan consciousness. But the point that I want to make before we begin this Zohar is that when you discuss the problems and the further, the deeper you penetrate into what? The problem, which means the not understanding, because when you understand the problem, all of its ramifications, the solutions become more difficult. Is that correct? Why do you go to a think tank guy? Because a think tank, well, he's seeing a little more of the problem than you will. So you want to expand a little. But still the objective is what? Come to a solution. Come to a solution. Whereas we're saying the opposite. Try to keep as close to you as you can the idea of understanding problems, understanding how much uncertainty, how much confusion lies in whatever I'm dealing with, whether it's my life, my health, whether it's my business. Keeping it close to the vest, meaning never letting it out into the world of solution. Because again, we're afraid the second part, once it comes into the realm of the knowable solution, we have come to the conclusion that it now becomes part of the knowable region, called Etz Hadat, knowing. Become part of knowledge. Becoming part of knowledge is good and evil, which means he'll let you go along the road thinking you've got the solution. It's good until such time when he feels he's already taken us into his total control, then drops us like a hot potato, and then everything begins to fail. Everything crumbles, whether it be health, wealth, and any other aspects of our life. But if we can stay close to the vest and understand further and further and further why there is so much, that there is confusion, and I'm not permitting the solution to come in, but rather I'm delving further and further and further into the unknowing of the problem, why there is a problem, why the problem it takes in every scope. And I never stop, and I don't look for solutions. I don't look for solutions. And we said, but that brings it into the knowable. But the knowable is connected with what? With the not knowing. I have brought the not knowing into a knowable. Is that clear to everybody? Is there anybody who doesn't understand that? No? There is confusion? No, you can be honest. Maybe it's better, the fact that you don't know. I only want to stress that unfortunately, this part has to be in the realm of the knowable. That we don't understand, but we have to know that we don't understand. Not that, well, I heard words and I can't seem to put my finger on it. But to know, to keep pressing for reasons why I do not understand yet what I'm supposed to do. I keep stressing why I don't know yet why I'm doing what I'm doing. Is that difficult?
Huh? But meaning that we need to practice each and every day. We don't know in order to bring something.
I don't know about bring what? The solution?
No.
No.
Whatever.
No. I don't even want to think about the solution, because the solution, once it's brought into the knowable and I follow the solution process, then I followed a road that must lead to confusion and disaster and chaos at the end of the road.
There's no action.
So what's that?
There's no action. It's the same thing as
then we should stay here. That means I should sit here and do nothing. Okay. But not even in my mind. Not even in my mind to figure out, if I do this, I do that. After all physical manifestations are a result of a mental process. I mean, we don't do anything in our lives. I mean, I don't go to the corner store until somehow a thought comes in. I need some bread, so I'll go to the bakery and buy bread. So the buying of the bread is in the physical realm, but there's always a forethought. So that goes without saying that, yeah, you're supposed to sit here and do nothing. But I'm saying not only not do nothing, but not even have the thought of going to the bakery.
But when it comes, it means it's going to get
something. That's right. Then we're saying you've moved into the realm of the knowing. In other words, I don't feel so well. Why don't I feel so well this morning? Oh, I know why. I didn't eat. I've come to the solution why I don't feel well. I didn't have no breakfast. I mean, here it's 2:00 in the afternoon. I didn't eat anything. I didn't realize. Now I found out why I don't feel well. That already is in the consciousness realm of Etz Hadat. Then, of course, if you go down to the bakery. But now we're saying, I'm going to stay in a position where I don't even know why I'm not well. So I'm still in a state of total confusion. I keep thinking of why I'm in a state of confusion, not what the answer is. And as long as I keep thinking of why I'm in a state of confusion, you have not left the realm of Etz HaChayim. You have not left, because it still, for me, remains the unknowable. The unknowable is not subject to time, space, and motion. The unknowable. So now we have a little problem. I mean, so let's all remain here. We'll wait here and do nothing. That is also not obviously the solution. However, but to think of the unknowable is not the idea of bringing the unknowable into the knowable. Knowing how much I don't know. Knowing how much I don't know is not part of the Satan process. Because Satan process wants you to do what? Just sit and not know? On the contrary. On the contrary. He must bring it into the knowable. What is the knowable? Knowing what you want to do. As long as you're staying where you don't know what to do. If he can only bring you into the knowable process, I know what to do. Then Satan has taken hold of taken a lease on your life. So you don't know, he has no... Yeah. Why? Because if you don't know, you're not going to do anything. If you don't do anything, then he hasn't led you down the road of disaster. He's got to lead you into a road that will follow you, will look even good, will have all the trimmings of success until finally he gets you. But he's got to get you moving on a road, a knowable road. That's Satan consciousness. As long as you keep at the unknowable, meaning for you, you don't know. The more you understand the problem, the more you don't know. The more ramifications, the more aspects of the problem suddenly appear. So you say, but now it's knowable? Yes, but what's knowable? The not knowing is knowable. The not knowing is being expanded. The not knowing is becoming knowledge. It's becoming the knowable. That is not Satan consciousness. Satan consciousness is bringing something from the unknowable, even though you know about the unknowable, but it cannot remain in the unknowable because he is not the, he needs world, he needs the Eitz HaDaat. He needs the tree of knowledge, where you now have knowledge what road you're going to take. He needs you to enter into a path that now moves somewhere. You're moving somewhere. But if you don't know where to move, then you're not moving. Then you haven't entered the realm of Etz Hadat. This has to be understood thoroughly. And there is no danger in understanding this thoroughly.
We should stop the logic and continue the thinking.
Think?
To stop the logic, that means come to the point of making an answer logical or a solution logical, to come up to a conclusion and just continue the process of thinking.
Well, why isn't thinking part of the logical process? In fact,
as
we're saying...
As long as you don't come to a conclusion...
We're saying this morning, maybe that's the best idea. We said... In the thinking process, can you come to a knowledge? Can you come to an understanding or in a solution?
Yes, I know.
Then you may brought it into the knowable realm. You brought it into Eitz HaDaat. That's what Eitz HaDaat means. Tree of knowledge. It has become the knowable. So, not only in the physical realm, but even in the thinking process, and I'm saying even in the thinking process. On the contrary, rather than search for solutions, search for more aspects of the problem. keep thinking all day and all night about the problems of how, why, and why there is so much confusion. Or just sit back and say, what am I even going to make an attempt to understand that I don't understand? I know already I don't understand. Nobody in the world understands. Economists understand. Give me one person in the world who knows. Clinton? Oh, no, who knows? Give me one person. An economist knows. We know their conclusions. One out of a trillion are seen down the road. But a straw is always better than no straw at all in the ocean. But the straw in the ocean doesn't save anybody. Better hold on to a straw. And what will happen if the boat doesn't come with a life raft? What is a straw going to do for you? This is Satan. When you say grab a straw, you've moved into the knowable. Ah, maybe this will help me, right? Maybe this will help. Then you've taken it out of the realm that this will not help me. No answers, no solution. When you're there, you're in the world of Etz HaChayim.
So what you are really directing is not to direct the thought toward the conclusion or an answer rather than
reverse.
Developing the actual problem.
That's right. That's right.
But then there's no action.
Now we have a problem, right?
Stay in the problem.
Now we have a problem.
Stay in the problem.
Beautiful. So, now what'll happen? So that means none of us are going to get up from this chair, and this is where we're going to remain.
This is almost like having a constant out-of-body experience, like you're watching somebody else's movie. Like there's a problem, you said.
And you're not even moving.
Let's see what he's going to do now.
Or, like they say sometimes, you can see your movie go by.
See, like, I'm curious now, what he's going to do now? What's going to happen?
I'm watching, like in a movie. You're watching. What is he going to do next, right? And where? But will that film then say, ah, maybe it means that I should do that? You can have a problem.
Yeah.
Because now Satan is going to even assist you there in out-of-body experiences that you see the way you're going down the road, right, where you arrived. Ah, that's what I should do. And then you come back into your own body and say, now I know what I have to do. So an out-of-body experience has almost separated myself from the physical body. Right?
But this is why it's
different. But there's strings attached.
But this is, yeah, that's why it's different.
Literally. Like you're going literally to, strings you're going attached to, because that's the way you come back into your body.
Right, like you're going to a meeting, you know, so we have tendency to prepare ourselves and say, we're going to say this, he's going to say that, and like, we already know the outcome. So now what we have to do, we go to that meeting, curious of knowing what's going to happen.
Right.
What is going to come out, not prepare ourselves, just whatever happens, happens.
Know all the problems. You can address all the problems that could be at the meeting, but it seems like not to address the solutions.
Yeah. So what does it mean, the Chacham Haroe Et HaNolad? The Chacham who sees the
Nolad.
Right.
So
but we know that we have to go back to what Chachma is. Chacham huroa et anolad. What it really means, what it really means, is that what a chacham is? Huroa et anolad?
He sees all the details.
This is the way we explain it, right? He sees all the details. Huroa et anolad, he sees the future down the road. Every aspect down the road. What does that say to him? It's not that now he has knows what to do. That suddenly he comes to the realization that the future and that are he. That's the result of seeing the future. Not that he sees the future. Moshe didn't see the future. Moshe didn't see himself that he would not take the Jews into Israel. Huh?
So
he couldn't see that realm. If he was a prophet, a prophecy means you see the future. What's the problem? He saw the future. So how was Moshe so great? I mean, he saw the future. But according to what we're saying, when he saw the future, he knew there is the realm of the future. He knew that on a physical level, Satan would take him and that they would not go into Israel. What he was trying to do for himself, which he was successful, and trying to also do for the Jews was what? Trying to take them, all of themselves, out of the Haroa et Anola, that future, that we see that future like that, that's not the future. Because what has become manifested on this realm, you know what's going to happen with it? What happened with it? They never got to Israel. You know why? Because that was already Haroa et Anolan. When he actually saw it, then it became the knowable. When it's in the realm of the knowable, then what can be in the realm of the knowable? Chaos.
I was thinking many times when Moses, Moshe went to get the Chota Brit. And then...
And he came down. He didn't know that it would break.
So he didn't know when he went up the Chota Brit, so he shouldn't
have gone up. He shouldn't have gone up in the first place. This is all the problems of Back to the Future and so on. We have resolved it on the tape on Rosh Chodesh El. Now go over it again 1,000 times. Maybe you'll begin to want to come
in. That's what happened.
All the movies they have on, you know, not have quantum leap, right? It's all not real. There's no validity to it. No validity. You know, going back in time. Going back in time, you should change it. He goes back to 1940, or goes back to December 6th, and they had the movie. You know, he's going back in time. He's trying now. Going to alert everybody to Pearl Harbor. Well, what's the problem? He's coming out from the year 1980 back to December 6th, 1941. And he's going to prevent it. But they can only come to a certain point. Why? Because they brought everything into the realm of the knowable. That's the way he's going to change it. That's not the way you're going to change it. How will you change it? By remaining in the unknowable. What does that mean? What does it mean, remaining in the unknowable? When it says, Achacham ro'eh et ha'nolad, that he sees the future, what he does is not look at the future. He says, the future is here now. If the future is here now, then it's not future. Then it's here now. So December 6th, it has to be by that person who would go back. It would have to be in someone living in December 6th, seeing it, the future is now. Well, Pearl Harbor, it's knowable, it has no validity. He wouldn't even make an attempt to change it. Because the minute he wants to change it, he's come to the solution. What happened today? What happens with that result?
So
part of Eitz HaDaat. There's no changes there. There's no truth there. So the seeing of Pearl Harbor on December 6th, even for someone who could see the future, see Pearl Harbor, like Moses, would not accept that development of the breaking of the Luchot. He wouldn't accept it. Why wouldn't he accept it? Because there is no future. What do you mean there's a future? The minute I agree that there's a future, what are you saying? You're saying, but tomorrow, after 40 days, he's going to come down, and they're going to make the golden calf, and he's going to break the scroll. And he sees that now. Does he see that now? Of course. But he's doing like we have been trying to come to the point now. When Moses says, the minute I see, after 40 days, and what happens? I'm not in the realm. I'm not in the realm of Etz HaChaim anymore. It is now a vivid physical demonstration of the future. Look at the trap. an economist, the weatherman. They're all part of satanic consciousness, telling you what the weather. Therefore, the light still wants to help us a little. Now listen, what's the weather going to be tomorrow? Well, the weatherman says in the newspaper, LA Times, you know, what the weather's going to be tomorrow. Oh, you know, the forecast, you remember the storms and rains? I remember I saw the first day, LA Times coming Thursday, and so on. Another storm is brewing in the Pacific, and there's going to be torrential rains over here. Now, here we're in Wednesday. I haven't seen the rains yet. The torrential rains. On Shabbat, he gave us a little teaser, you know, right? But where are the rains? Where are they? Satan is so perfect. Who's thinking about that he was wrong? Is that on our minds now? My business has gone bankrupt. So I was going to tell me that he forecasted rainy weather for the whole week, and I'm going to be busy with that he's wrong. The Economist tells us how the country is becoming rosy. I mean, meanwhile, he's suffering. He can't make a living. I mean, he's going to worry that the Economist is wrong. We have no time. Also part of Satan consciousness. He does both. Gets us there. Oh, the Economist says like that. Okay, good. It's getting better. But he's wrong. We don't pay attention. He manipulates. I want to get, we haven't got much time to go. I want to come to what the Zohar provides us with as a conclusion. But even with Moses, does everybody understand that the minute Moses would have seen and accepted the principle of the ark and all of that, meaning he had seen the future, he made the future become manifested. So we have a problem. Well, I'm supposed to come to a realization that tomorrow is here now. Tomorrow's here now, but there's a trap in the tomorrow's here now. What's the trap? I know about the future. That's a trap. So the scientist has a problem. Is it true? Yes, it's true. And this is where they blow their minds. Is it true that tomorrow's here now? Ask any physicist, any mathematician. Absolutely. Well then, Einstein, tell me which stocks to buy tomorrow. I don't know. Why don't you know? Why don't you know? If you say tomorrow's here now, why don't you give me some advice? Give yourself some advice. I don't know. I don't know. Because you can't know at that moment. If it becomes unknowable, then you're in what? In the time frame of tomorrow, today, and yesterday. And we said that's Satan consciousness. So whatever he'll give you in the way of thinking of a good stock tomorrow, and we can all think of what we want to buy tomorrow, or what we want to buy at the opening, or whenever it's going to happen. All that thinking is Satan consciousness. Because it's all in that frame, still dealing with time, space, and motion, that there is a tomorrow. Now we're stuck. Okay, we're stuck now. I'd rather remain stuck. We walked out of here, but at least to confront the idea that knowing that today, tomorrow, and yesterday is all here now, and I'm still referring to today, tomorrow, and yesterday, still puts me where? Out of the realm of Eitz HaChayim, into Eitz HaDaat. Why? Because I'm using those terms, today, tomorrow, and yesterday. Everybody asked. So we're stuck. Well, the world is stuck. I mean, where are the solutions to anybody? Anybody coming up with any solution? Nobody's coming up with solutions. So we're stuck anyway. So what's the difference being stuck like we are right now? Which we're saying that at least if I'm stuck and I'm going to sit on this chair, I'm going to sit on this chair and do nothing, is that worse than, I can't sit on this chair. I mean, I have appointments. If people who want to buy things from me are going to be there. If I don't show up, then I have to leave this chair. So, first, I'll preface it. I'm not sure, even if I left you just with this idea. I don't know. You've elevated yourself into another consciousness. I'm not sure I'm going to have the time to answer you. But I'll give you an illustration, which I think will bring you to what the Zohar is trying to say. The story of Black Velvet. Have all of you heard the story of Black Velvet? No. Okay. No? You heard the story of Black Velvet. Okay. I'll have to be brief about it. Story of Black Velvet concerns a man in a town that... A very wealthy man, and he wanted to have a scholar for her. He had a daughter, he wanted to have a scholar for a son-in-law. Study for the rest of his life, just become a scholar. And so he went to the school, he was prepared to give a tremendous dowry that the man would be able to live, so it wouldn't be bread of shame. And so they were married, the scholar with his daughter, and he presented the dowry. And he says, listen, in order that it not be bread of shame that you don't feel you're getting something for nothing, every 6 months, we go to they were living in a little town, we go to the main place of exhibition, and there we will buy things that then will be sold, and you'll make a profit. So it's not that you're just eating up the dowry, number one. And secondly, you see that, you've done something. You'll come with me. So there's some action. Okay. It was $100,000. He takes the $100,000 in his pocket. And they come into the big town where the fair is, where everybody's going to buy everything and take it back to their place, to their cities. And he says, you know what? You sit down in the Bet HaKnesset and study. That's your job. When I see a good deal, I'll come to you. You never heard that, Yosef? No, you haven't. And, and I'll come back and I'll fetch you. I'll fetch the money if I see a good deal. Well, he's sitting there and studying. Guy walks in through. He says, you want to buy some black velvet? He says, okay, buy black velvet. He says, how much do you want to buy? He says, well, I have $100,000. He says, you have $100,000? Oh, I've got a couple of million rolls of black velvet. And I'll sell it to you for $100,000. Okay. Buys it, gives him the money. His father-in-law comes in a few minutes afterwards, says, well, I found something great that'll keep you going for another 6 months, and give me the money. He says, I just bought the black velvet. He says, you're crazy? For $100,000? I mean, it'll probably take 2,000 years until you can sell all, one person selling all this black velvet, right? Oh, what can he do? The money's gone. They take the black velvet and go home. Didn't take too long. Middle of the night, comes up a sharp knock on the door, opens up the door, soldiers. And I don't have to tell you, see soldiers at your door, you become frightened. Anyway, they said, we want to come in. Come in. And he said, look, we understand you have black velvet. He says, yeah, I have black velvet. He says, we want to buy all your black velvet. Let's say he bought it a quarter rope, whatever it is. He says, yeah, of course. And they say, we understand you bought it for 25 cents. Here's 50 cents. He says, no, no, no. They said, well, I'll give you 75. He says, no, that's not what I'm trying to tell you. He was trying to tell them that he doesn't want so much profit. There's a limit to it. Just because he has the goods doesn't mean he can take double the profit. He thought that was unreasonable. And they keep arguing until they finally say, we'll give you $10 a roll. If you don't take it, we're going to confiscate the black velvet anyway. Now, all he did was sit on a chair, never moved. And the black velvet came to him. The thing came to him. It's a story that Kabbalists tell about the black velvet. Right? So, running to your business, there's no guarantee. Answering the phones, no guarantee. Even doing a tremendous deal, selling trillions of dollars worth of goods, and then the fellow goes bankrupt. I mean, it also didn't make such a good deal. So all of these great deals that we're pursuing all day, maybe we should sit on a chair, especially if we learn now that the minute I already know how to do the deal, I'm in the level of Eitz HaDaat. I'm in the level of where it's come into the world of noble, and in the world of noble is only Satan. Only Satan. That's why Moses learned that he would never, Roeta Nolad, he would see all that using that. That's a trap for him. Seeing it, he knew he couldn't change it. Couldn't change it. You know why he wouldn't be able to change it? If he saw and paid attention to the breaking of the scroll, then he brought the future into the knowable. We said anything that's brought into the knowable, even the future, becomes a tzaddat. You've got to remain totally unknowable as to what is ever going to happen. So now we're in a bind. What do we do? Let me just read the Zohar. We don't have that much time. But here's what I wanted. Actually, there's two Zohars over here. But remember, we began off by saying, what is this about? What is about here is how they made the oil. How they made the oil for the candelabra. I can't go into that other part of the Zohar and also the Ari, which I thought we would read, but this is more important. A little more knowledge without application is again, you know what it is? So I would have given you a tremendous more knowledge this morning, and then what would have happened? Now you'd be more in the Etz Adat.
You asked the question why.
Right? What? Well, and then we get the answers. We have a problem. Right? We should keep asking why. If we can never stop asking the why and never look for the solution, maybe that's the solution. Right?
Is the process going from knowing that I'm not, that I don't know, to I don't know that I know? I mean, being
no,
in that
you
state,
must know.
Being in that state,
you must know that I don't know.
Okay, and then I know. You must know that I don't know, right? And then is it right to go to not knowing that I know? Which is state of not
knowing that I know, meaning not knowing the solution.
Right.
That's right. Meaning when he bought the black velvet, right? There was no solution. He did the action, didn't he?
Which means the answer is here, but I don't receive it.
And I never want to know. More better still, I don't want to know. I don't want to know. I'm supposed to go now and sign a big contract. If the minute I sign the contract, I will know how much money I'm going to make. That means I know. And I don't want to know. Well, there's only one way, by not knowing. How will you not know? Never going there. Is that right? How else will you not know? Meaning, we boil it down to sitting on the chair and not getting up from the chair. Not getting up from the chair. It's almost within that realm. Anyway, the candelabra, and the making of the oil, and this is the clue, says the Ari, and we don't have no time, but They vayichu elecha shemen zayit zach, and you should take unto you oil, olive oil, pure. In a word, zach, pure. Says the Ari, like this, you know, you can learn this year after year and never understand what it says. Says the Ari, in a word, zach is the 27 letters of the Hebrew alphabet, 27. Zion is 7, Kaf is 20. There lies the secret. The light. What's the light? What's the light? What's the light? 27 letters. Like the 72 names. You use this term, use the Mahash on Shabbat. Use the Mahash. It doesn't mean anything. Yeah, we can say it means Moshe. But it's not Moshe. Well, it has the same letters as Moshe. But is it Moshe? No, it's Mahash. 3 letters. We use it on Shabbat. It's doing its job. Do we know how it's doing its job? Do we know why it's doing its job? We're smart enough to come to the synagogue and operate with the unknowable. That's light. That's truth. That's pure. Only source. Therefore, the Zohar goes on to say, and I just will conclude with this, that it says, Va'ata titzaveh, and you should command. Now that's a double, it's redundant, because titzaveh means you should command. Va'ata titzaveh, or the Zohar says, Va'ata hakrev. The word Va'ata is superfluous. What does he answer? What does he answer? He brings in all of these different and you should speak unto all of the people of wise hearts, etc., etc. Says the Zohar, El hakol hu besod elyon. Right here lies the upper secret. Kedei lichlol imo hashkina, ki hashkina nikrat ata. The Shekhinah is our connection to the realm of Eitz HaChaim, and we're connected to the Shekhinah in the world of Eitz HaDa. Ve'ata, says the Zohar here, the Vav and Ata means that when you take the world of Eitz HaDa, world of Eitz HaDa, and keep pumping it into the Vav, into the world of the unknown, into the world of Eitz HaChaim. In other words, the minute a thought comes, I'll do this. Oh. No, I'm not going to let it go there. I'm not going to let it go there. I'm not going to let it go there. Then you will always remain. But you must take what we've been discussing all this morning is what the Zohar says. You want the pure light. What do you mean the pure light? You have the searchlight. What to do? Well, now I'll know what to do. Did I say you will understand what you're doing? I didn't say that, did I? I only said the problem is that once you know what you're doing, once you understand and know the solution, I said, then you're Chas V'Shalom dead. Because you brought it into the world of knowable. But if you're being told to do this, and there's no logic to it, no reason for it, and that's what you're doing. You don't even know why you're doing it. Does it ever happen in our lives that we're doing things and then we say a minute later, unfortunately, is always the other way around. How could I have done such a stupid thing like that? Unfortunately, that happens more times than it doesn't happen. That later, 5 minutes later, 5 days later, 5 years later, or 50 years later, how could I have done such a stupid thing like that? I don't know if you all know, but had Reichman not bought commercial paper, he wouldn't have gone bankrupt. Why? He wouldn't be squeezed for money. Commercial paper means 30 days, 90 days. And when real estate was going down, people started feeling, hey, wait a second, who wants to keep his commercial paper? What happens if it was not commercial paper? It was stocks, 30 years, 30 bonds, 30 years. Would he have suffered? No. No. But this was better, so he was playing with the rates of the market. You didn't always have to keep paying a high price or low price, whatever. Now he says, how could I have done such a stupid thing like that? All he had to do was just avoid that one item. Of everything he did, so diversified, he had just not done that. We say that every day in our lives. How could I have done such a stupid thing like that? We say that all the time. How come we did such a stupid thing? Meaning, when we later attribute that to being stupid, we're not applying what we learned today. You know what you're saying? Why didn't I see to avoid the mistake? You're not saying, if I did such a stupid thing, that means that there was totally unconsciousness there, right? And it brought me to disaster. Why didn't you understand that maybe in your life, you don't know what's going on? And maybe that's what the light wants, that you stay in the realm of not knowing. Because down the road, if you are not conscious of the not knowing being an asset, but rather it's always a liability, we express it as, well, why did I do such a stupid thing like that? I don't say, thank God that I wasn't conscious. Because, by the way, at that moment, you turned it around. At that moment, if Reichman would say, oh, I did such a stupid thing. Oh, boy. Oh, boy, had my mind really been involved in it. I don't know, then it would be disaster down the road somewhere. That moment, he could have turned it around. That moment, he could have turned it around. Why? Because once he removes it, there's no chaos and disaster in Etzach Hayim. Once he would say everything is in the unknowable. In fact, everything I did, no reason. It was all stupid. Then you have the pure light. Then you have black velvet. Oh, but, well, how is it going to work out now? Real estate is still going down. Did everybody who owns real estate lose their money? Maybe. Many families that I know are still losing and are still going to crumble and so on and so on. But everybody, not everybody. Not everybody here in Los Angeles. Many people, most people, whatever you want to say. But not everybody. Well, once there is exceptions, I mean, what places one into the exception to the rule and the other one? Not in the exception to the rule. Answer is, this is, as long as we remain in a consciousness of understanding that whatever is being forced down my throat by Satan to understand, I don't want to. Does that mean I shouldn't go to my place of business? You go to your place of business. But I know when I come in over there, I would like, if I did the Anabakoa, I connected to the Anabakoa, I connected to all the seven, the 27 letters. Keep doing that. Go to your place of business before you start. Scan the Zohar, learn the Zohar. I mean, what does this have to do with bringing a customer? Oh, you want to understand how it brings the customer? Now it's in the knowable. But I don't see how this is going to bring it. And you really don't see it. Well, you only trust the light. That's right. The only flashlight in the world is the light. And the light, we will never have a concept of. We will never see the light. You see, electricity already is in the knowable. This light can only come through the 27 letters. That's in a nutshell what we should be doing. Does that mean sit on the chair and not go to the business? No, go to the business. But now you should learn how to conduct your business, not looking for the solution to the business. Well, then I should sit here and so on. No. Your decisions, the best decisions, and I live. Don't know, I'm the happiest man in the world. When I know what to do, I feel that I'm falling into the trap. When I don't know, the answer falls in. It's the way it's supposed to work. And you know what? That's the way it works. And you know what? You got a choice. Try some other thing. But let's at least try a new method that has never been tested before. From today on, a method that nobody has ever tested. Well, nobody's ever tested. Speak to a scientist. I mean, I won't get FDA approval if I didn't test it first, right? Once it's tested, and once it's FDA approval, it's not going to kill people along the road, right?
Exactly.
I didn't have the slightest idea that we would be where we were now.
Rob, we did talk a lot about the problem, but the final answer was extremely short.
Better we
just enough to know. the solution
should be
right.
The problem is clear. 99% of the solution was arrived at.
I agree. I feel what you said. It was nice. But when do we get the rest of the Zohar?
You mean that?
Do the Anabakar, do this. And remain not knowing. What would be wrong if we don't know? Just do this. And that's it. Nothing else. I can tell you. I mean, just to write the experiences, unfortunately, experiences do not. A story once in a while about Blake, but they do not create the impression. It's an internal thing. Even the Black Velvet, wow, it doesn't. And it could happen like that, right? But we're not impressed. That's a miracle. See, he's even programmed a new book on that. He's even programmed us into the idea that miracles happen once in a while. You pray to God, a miracle. The miracle happens. As a miracle, Satan consciousness. Satan consciousness. Tomorrow you forget about it. How many miracles happen? I didn't expect to get this big order. I didn't expect this. I expected to go bankrupt and suddenly this happened. What a miracle. Satan consciousness. Satan consciousness. You've attributed something to the success. It's a knowable feature, factor that's attributing to success. Cannot be. Cannot be. Temporarily, it's a miracle. Then you need another one and another one and another one and another one, and those don't come.
Well,
okay.